Hey guys, welcome to this bonus session here at the 2X Project, the email prospecting playbook. And what I want to do here today is just kind of run through this pretty quickly and then give you guys some time to ask questions. We can do some brainstorming here. We can address any areas where you might still have some questions, doubts, concerns, etc. But essentially what I wanted to put together was a way to reawaken dead leads, generate new clients, and convert those prospects who are not yet ready into clients in a more predictable fashion. And just so you know, the motivation behind this was basically that as I was talking with more of you in this group, I realized that there's been some confusion regarding when to use which type of email. Or the differences between each type of emails. And I'm referring to 9-word emails, warm emails, and then nurturing emails. So what I wanted to do is I wanted to clarify the differences and then go beyond that and give you an actual playbook, something very actionable that you could follow that you can actually start using now to get results. I'm actually this has sparked an idea, and I'm actually working on a book right now, a short book on this very topic. And once I have that out, I'm going to send each of you guys a physical copy of the book, and it'll be sometime next month. Now, what I decided to do was rather than dump a bunch of information on you, as you can probably see if you've downloaded the handout, is give you a more detailed handout because I don't know about you, but I am the kind of person who would rather have something kind of physical and handy that I can go back to and use as a guide rather than have to take down a bunch of notes, especially if it's kind of a new concept or a new way of looking at something. So what I want to do is to create a handout that pretty much stands on its own that you can use as a reference. So I recommend downloading that for sure. Consider printing it. You can take notes on that. So I've left you some space in the margins, and then this is something you can kind of keep coming back to. Maybe you can create your own cheat sheets, whatever makes sense. So what I'm going to do is, because I give you so much detail in the handout, I'm not going to go through all of this in great detail. There's a lot of script examples in here. I think the best value is for me to just kind of run through the playbook, give you an overview of when to use each type of email. A little bit of background on why I'm making these recommendations, and then we can open it up for live Q&A, discussions, whatever you guys want to do. So I'm here at your disposal. So a bit of context beyond what I've already given you. And one of the things you probably notice is, right, the whole email, even, first of all, email's not dead. Email's not going anywhere. And if anything, inboxes are getting more and more crowded. There's just a craze towards marketing automation. And marketing automation, basically, you know, people are just trying to automate as much of their marketing and marketing processes as possible. And I think that's great. There's always a time and a place for broadcasts. We use marketing broadcasts in our business. But what that's doing is it's basically creating more and more noise in a way, and it's harder and harder to get noticed in that world. So a lot of what I'm going to talk about here today is all about doing the opposite of that, is cutting through that noise. And in a world where there's so much of that noise, so much of that sameness, so much of those one-to-many emails, by that I mean broadcast, right? I'm broadcasting a message to 20,000 people, for instance, then one-to-one emails really stand out. When you think about it, if you look at your inbox, I bet that when, at the end of the day, let's say you haven't really processed any emails, so it's crowded, it's just full of email. If you see two emails from two different friends, those really stand out, and you'll probably look at those first, right? So that's the whole idea here. Now, the system at a glance, the prospecting playbook that I'm going to go through has three steps, and you want to do them in this order. If I were you, I would start by going after dead leads and dormant clients, and I call that activating them because you want – they're already there. You've already had some contact with them, even if it's been months or even a year or two. You want to activate dead leads and dormant clients. And one thing I didn't put in there was the best way to do that is to use 9-word emails. 9-word emails are very, very effective with those audiences. Once you've cleared the decks of dead leads and dormant clients, you want to then start generating new leads with cold prospects. With cold prospects, what you want to use are warm emails. So dead leads, normal clients is going to be 9-word emails. New leads, in other words, cold prospects, people who don't know who you are, warm emails is the best approach. And then once you start generating some of these, once some of the people from the first group have replied, then you want to start nurturing the not-yet-ready leads. So these are the people who told you through the effort in steps number one and number two, hey, thanks, Susan. Thanks, Marsh. Thanks, Tim. I don't have a need right now, but I'll keep your information handy, right? We've all gotten those. These are the people you want to stay in touch with, along with everyone else in your database who hasn't responded, but you know that they could be a prospect. You know there's been an interest in the past, and it's been a timing issue. Timing issue, that's why you haven't worked together or you haven't worked together in a while. So start by going after the low-hanging fruit, activate dead leads and dormant clients using 9-word emails, and we'll go through those. Then you want to start knocking on new doors with warm emails. And then you want to stay in touch and stay top of mind with leads who are not ready yet to hire you. All right. So I defined what each of those means just real quick. Dead leads, these are prospects who indicated interest in your service at some point but never turned into clients. Many of them will probably not remember your name if you were to contact them today, but they've indicated interest. There's something there. They've raised their hand at some point. Dormant clients, you've already worked for them at some point, but it's been a while. New leads, these are cold prospects, right? So these are people who they become leads once they've raised their hand and said, yeah, I might have a need for that, but you've never had contact prior to that. And then not yet ready leads are going to be people who've expressed interest in your services but that weren't ready to hire you at the time. All right, so let's start with step number one, activating dead leads and dormant clients. The reason I strongly suggest you start here is you want to go after the low-hanging fruit. You know, I don't know about you, but I get very motivated when I get quick wins. So if I were to start any new to learn a new skill, start a new process, start embarking on a project, I want to start seeing results quickly because that's going to give me the motivation I need to keep going. So that's first. Second of all, who doesn't want to land something quickly, right? And I found this is going to be the place where you have the highest chances of success because there's been some contact in the past. And the best approach for this group is the 9-word email. Now, we talked about the 9-word email earlier in this program, but what I wanted to do here, especially in this handout, is to give you a little bit more about the philosophy behind the psychology, too, why this works, and then give you five different flavors and then some sample scripts. And that way you have some great examples to pull from. So where does this come from? All right, so the idea really came from a marketer by the name of Dean Jackson. And Dean works in a bunch of different businesses, but he kind of stumbled upon this idea working with some real estate clients. And the first email that he wrote happened to be 9 words, and hence he coined the phrase the 9-word email. 9-word email. The emails don't have to be 9 words. The concept is really what matters. Two things have to be true. First of all, very, very short. Second of all, it asks a question, and it ends with a question. Not a question and then, okay, just let me know or feel free to contact me. None of that. It ends with a question. The other thing about the 9-word email that's interesting is that it mimics a real-life conversation. And I'm going to give you kind of some offbeat examples, but I think you can, you know, see where this can you could recreate this or how this has happened to you in the past. Let's say that you meet somebody at a party and she told you that she was thinking about going to wine country this summer. And let's just say that you have been to California wine country many times before. You are an expert. You know where to stay. You know the wineries to visit. You know all the great restaurants. So you got really excited because this is something you love to talk about. So you gave her some tips, and she was very appreciative. And let's just say that a few weeks later, or a couple of months later, it's now springtime, and you run into this lady, and let's say her name is Susan, and you run into Susan at the grocery store and say, "Hey, how are you?" Hey, and the conversation might naturally turn into the wine country trip. "Hey, so are you still thinking about going to wine country this summer, California wine country?" Wouldn't that be a natural question? So the other example that I have here, this is really offbeat, but now we're kind of getting into more of a commercial setting. Let's just pretend that you work at the men's department at Nordstrom, and somebody comes in, let's say his name is Mr. Smith, and he is looking for a brown sweater. And you help them with some selections, and he looks at some of them. He picks out two or three of them, and he puts them by the checkout register. But he says, "You know, let me think about this. Let me look at some other things here." He said, "No problem. Take your time." You help another customer, and you suddenly realize that Mr. Smith is gone. He just left, and he left his sweaters right there on the counter. Now, let's say that later that day you're at the food court. Bear with me. I know this is really odd. And you run into Mr. Smith, and you say, "Hey, Mr. Smith, hey, great to run into you here. Hey, do you still want those sweaters?" Right? So notice how natural that might feel in a situation like that. It's the same thing in an onboard email. You're trying to recreate that conversation you would have if you were following up with somebody on something specific that they had talked to you about or that they worked with you on. So the bones of a 9-word email, so the context and the approach is essentially you had a conversation with someone, you discussed X, you ran into them later, and you asked them about X. So I have some examples here. "Hey, Joan, are you still thinking about hiring an outside writer this year?" Right. Why does this work so well? Basically, it follows a SPEAR formula. It's short, it's personal, and it's expecting a reply. It's expecting a reply because notice you ended with a question. You didn't qualify the question. You didn't keep adding stuff after that. You just ended with a question. So I created a couple of examples here, and then I started getting into the flavors. So what I wanted to do with these flavors is show you the five different varieties and then show you where they work best. Now, it's important that you resist the temptation to add fluff to this email. The tendency for most of us, myself included, is just to warm up the prospect with some small talk, dance around the issue, say things such as, "I'd be happy to discuss your needs," or "let me know if there's anything I can do to help you with any writing projects." I get that. You need to resist the temptation. You need to keep it as short as possible. And if you follow the examples I'm going to give you, and if you try to mimic that in a natural, relevant way, I think you're going to start seeing results very, very quickly. The other thing I should, and we'll talk more about subject lines, but notice that the subject line in these examples are all very direct. Now, in a marketing broadcast, many times it makes sense to build curiosity, right? Because you're trying to get the email open. That can work in a one-to-many email. But in a one-to-one email, you want to be as direct as possible because you want to mimic the conversation or the flow that would happen if you knew the person. And we'll talk more about that here in a few minutes, but I just wanted to go ahead and mention it now because you'll see that throughout in these subject line examples. So flavor number one is "Are you still?" And that's the one we've kind of used so far, which is the "Are you still thinking about this? Are you still considering getting some writing help? Are you still interested in launching a newsletter this year?" This tends to work really well when you have some information from a previous exchange. Okay, so you've worked with this prospect or this client in the past. They contacted you and mentioned something specific. You discussed something specific. Are you still interested in launching a newsletter this year? Now, it can't hurt to jog the prospect's brain in some way. And one great way, an elegant way to do that is just to use a short PS. Or you could, and I'll show you some examples later, you could include your email signature, which indirectly just kind of jogs their memory. But notice in this example, PS, I'm the writer Brenda Stevens referred to you last October. Now, you can test this, but the reason I like to use it in a PS is it doesn't take away from the question. It still keeps the question intact, and it doesn't put a buffer around it. Okay, so are you still is flavor number one. Flavor number two is are you, and this is really useful when you're not entirely sure what your prospect might need. You're kind of in the dark because it's been a while, or you're not sure, or you don't know enough about them. Okay, so are you planning on publishing some white papers this year? Are you thinking about getting some outside writing help in the next few months? Do you is a flavor of are you. Do you still have a potential need for a content marketing writer? All right, so then I have some examples there, and then I move into how you could provide some context in your email signature. Don't get carried away, though. You know, you don't want you can include a link to your homepage there. It's a very natural thing in an email signature, but you know, don't get carried away with a bunch of fancy graphics and then a bunch of other links and all your social media profiles. So if you have to create a separate email signature for this, do that. Again, there's a minimalist element to these emails, and you want to stay as true to that as possible. It has to feel like a one-to-one email. And if it's overly produced, overly designed, it's just not going to have that feel. Flavor number three, would you? This works really well with current clients, dormant clients, not yet ready leads. Would you be interested in working with me on your new marketing collateral? Would you like some help planning your next white paper? Would you like me to help you write another product backgrounder? Okay, notice that you're proposing essentially an idea, something you think might help the client, something along those lines. So I have some examples there. And then flavor number four is have you. And this is also kind of an idea proposal flavor. Have you considered doing this? Have you considered writing some customer success stories to highlight how your, you know, XYZ monitors generate results? Have you considered publishing a short newsletter to stay top of mind with longer-term prospects? So this can work well when the recipient would recognize your name. Notice it would be much more natural than someone who would probably be completely lost because it's been so long. It's been 3 years since you had contact, and they would have no idea. So it tends to work better with dormant clients, for instance. But it could work well with a dead lead. If in certain situations, if there's enough there that they would connect the dots quickly. All right, flavor number five, the final one. This is I like to call it a very strategic way to throw spaghetti at the wall. So it's the do you. You know, do you do this? Do you ever work with outside writers? Do you ever publish white papers? Do you produce marketing materials for your reseller partners? Do you need some help writing marketing materials? Very direct. Okay, and it can work well with dormant clients or when you're checking in to see if something they mentioned a few months ago is still a possibility, or when you started offering a new service and you want to see if some of your old clients might be interested in learning more about it. So, you know, do you need some help writing marketing materials? Do you have a use for this? Is this something you're considering? Do you need help with that? And here again, you can add a PS if you need to. I wanted to include an example that Karen from the group used, and I have to guess at the subject line because I forgot to ask her what subject line she used, but this is on page 10 of your handout. The subject that I would have used in a situation like that could be, again, very straightforward, projects. Hi, Robert. I'm mapping out my schedule for the coming months. Any projects I should have on my radar? Kate. Or actually, I should have said Karen. I don't know why I put Kate in there. I think I was just... Here, let me correct that here. All right, so notice that this took a very interesting approach. You know, she pointed to something that that's happening, that's creating some constraints. There is kind of a stated or need here. So something has happened. They've had some exchanges in the past. they've possibly worked together. And something like this, and I use this a couple of different ways, is mapping out my schedule. I've also used the, hey, I'm going to be out for 2 weeks in late March. Anything I should have on my radar screen, anything that, you know, you're considering getting started on soon, right? You're creating something definite that's got constraints, and it's a perfect excuse to reach out to people, especially if you've done business with them in the past, to see if there's anything you can help them with. So as you can see, guys, that there's a ton of possibilities here. You can create hybrids from some of these. I think these five flavors, you know, are very, very flexible. But I think by knowing what the flavors are and when they work best, at least you have some guidelines. And again, this is a great way to activate those dead leads and dormant clients. We'll talk a little bit more about when you can use them to nurture those not yet ready leads here in a minute. Talk about subject lines here in the handout as well, and just to explain a little bit further why you want to keep those very straightforward. You know, you don't want it to feel like a bait and switch, and otherwise it really takes away from the email. So that's step one: activate dormant clients, dead leads with 9-word emails. Step two is, once you've kind of cleared the decks with those, you want to start knocking on new doors. You want to generate new leads, and you're going after prospects who are completely cold. They have no idea who you are. And that's where the warm email can work really, really well. Now, what makes the 9-word emails work is three factors. There is, of course, personalization. Just like with a 9-word email, there's no doubt in the prospect's mind that this was written for them. Also, it's very relevant, which makes it personalized as well. And it's brief. Now, not as brief as a 9-word email, but my suggestion is to keep it to under 125 words. I find that when you have more than that, try to knock it down to under 125 or less, and it'll always be stronger. I rarely see a warm email that's stronger above that word count. The reason these work so well is it shows a prospect that you've done your homework. And again, they stand out. So that's the common theme that I mentioned at the beginning of this call. They stand out because in a world of one-to-many emails and email broadcasts, personalized emails really stand out. When you show you've done your homework, this is written specifically for them, it's going to cut through the noise. Now, it's got to be a little bit longer because they don't know you. You haven't had any contact whatsoever. So you have to show them why they should pay attention. And you'll see the warm email template there. I strongly suggest sticking to that. And you'll see that in all these examples, they all follow that same classic formula. You start with a meaningful connection. Then you have your value statement, which is really just a statement that explains what you do, for whom, and why you're different. A link to a page on your website, some samples. Maybe it doesn't have to be a link. It could say, I've worked for, you know, X, Y, and Z, three different clients that they would recognize. And then a soft invitation to connect. What tends to work best with that short invitation is, here again, a question. So notice the theme here. Right? Questions beg to be answered. Now, with meaningful connections, this is where 90% of people get really confused, tripped up, and stuck. And that is finding something they feel is worthy of contacting the prospect. And I'm here to tell you, I've been doing this for a long, long time, and you don't need something dramatic. You don't need something that's going to knock your socks off. I've narrowed it down for you to two types of meaningful connections that can work very, very well and don't take that much research. One is trigger attributes. And trigger attributes are basically attributes about a prospect that could potentially trigger or signal a need for your services. I have some examples here. Hey, Mr. Prospect, I notice that you have quite a few, you know, case studies posted on your website. Or I notice that you're starting to really go after, you know, the healthcare market. Or I notice that you do a lot of work in this area. Or I know that marketing and selling, you know, a certain type of product that you have often requires a lot of educational marketing content. Or I was reading through your product lines and noticed that, you know, this, have you considered doing this with that content? So it could be kind of consultative in nature. But I have some examples here, and you'll notice there's not much to it. It's, hey, I notice that you do a lot of this. And what you're essentially telling them is, you do a lot of this. That's what I help clients with. You know, here's a little bit of credibility about who I am. Should we connect? That's it. Notice that in these examples, a lot of this can be reused. You know, let's just look at the one for the big data webinar series. The meaningful connection, which is I've been watching your big data webinar series, that you're not going to be able to reuse. But notice that the rest of it you could use. I'm writing because I'm a technology veteran who works with enterprise software companies to do this, that, and the other. I've worked with X, Y, and Z. Here's some samples of my work. Should we connect? Right? Same thing with the second example. I was curious, do you ever work with an outside writer? So starting from there on, that's reusable. So when you think about it this way, all you got to find is a trigger attribute. In other words, something that indicates a potential need for your services. Okay. Now, so that's the first meaningful connection that I would seriously consider. And then the second one would be naming a relevant client or accomplishment or relevant knowledge or experience that you have. The cool thing about this is it doesn't necessarily have to be from your freelance life. It could be based on a hobby, some other information, knowledge, and experience that you have, something about your background, something from your previous career. Or, of course, it could be, you know, clients you've worked with, certain experience, and you'll see some examples here, okay? So this can the deeper you work in a specific industry or target market, the more you can leverage, but you can also leverage things from your past. I find that if you stick to these two meaningful connections, you'll start finding opportunities to contact prospects very, very quickly, rather than have to research each one on a deep level to see if you can point to something kind of unique or different. That is a lot of work. Now, you'll still run into those, but you'll run into those kind of serendipitously. When that happens, of course, use it. But instead of searching for them, just use the things that are kind of obvious. What I've shown you here, it will stand out enough that your emails will be very effective. And again, we talked about reusing a lot of this copy. And when you can reuse 80%, 60 to 80% of your email copy, that makes things a lot easier. All right, so that is, again, step two is we talked about step one, you're activating dormant leads, or dormant clients, dead leads. Step two is knocking on new doors, right? So going after prospects who've never heard of you, knocking on those doors. And step three is to nurture the leads who are not ready for you yet. Now, there's two types who fit into this category. Some could be dormant clients who you think could hire you at some point in the future, but the bulk of them will probably be prospects who have indicated interest, but the timing wasn't right. Or they said, you know, so they don't, you know, I don't have anything right now, but I'll keep your information handy, or feel free to stay in touch in the future. Anything along those lines tells me that there is a need. Now, I included some statistics here. I urge you to really think through this, because I really believe that lead nurturing is the most underused lever in the freelance world, because most of us just aren't programmed to stay in touch with longer-term or not-yet-ready leads. There have been several studies done on this, and the numbers are a little bit different, but they all point to the same thing. A very small minority of prospects are going to be looking for a service provider like you right now. So in other words, a very small number of them are in need, have a current need. And the study from Foresight indicated that's about 3%. Others I've seen are more along the lines of 10%, but that's still a very small number. You knock on 100 doors, only 3%, only three of them are actively looking. Now, there's a group right behind them, 40%, who are poised to begin a search. And then the other 57% just won't be looking anytime soon. So the trick here is to, instead of looking for the 3%, instead of looking for the needle in the haystack, the trick is to look for the 40% who are poised to begin. Because if you're looking for the 40%, you're automatically going to find the 3%. Okay, so basically any prospect who's relatively qualified but doesn't have a current need, but they're still qualified, should get on your nurturing list. And I include some statistics as to what happens to these. I tell you, nurturing longer-term leads, not-yet-ready leads, changed my business when I was in sales and changed my business when I became a freelancer. Because just by staying in touch in a value-added way, not in a weird, pesky kind of way, just every 8 weeks or so, just sending something of value, when these people had a need, I was the first person they came to. I was the first person they thought of. And the statistics just bear this out. You need two things in order for someone to hire you. The timing has to be right, and there has to be a certain level of trust. Think about any large purchase you've ever made, right? Especially large purchases. The timing has to be right, and there has to be a level of trust there. So what you want to do is, if the timing's not right, and of course they probably don't know who you are, they don't really trust you yet, that's fine, that's very natural, is you want to stay top of mind until the timing is. And by the way you've been staying in touch, start developing that trust. So here's what you want to do. You essentially want to create and you can do this on a spreadsheet. You don't have to get a fancy system, although I'll give you a list here in a second of systems to consider. You can do this in a spreadsheet at first. And essentially, just every 8 weeks or so, those prospects who are in this bucket, send them something of value. Now, don't overthink it. Articles you've written. Send them an article you've written. Say, hey, I thought, you might find this interesting. Hope you're doing well. A report or white paper you came across. Useful, relevant tools and resources. So if you've created a lead magnet, or as you create lead magnets, those become great nurturing tools. Success stories, third-party content you come across. Don't be afraid to send a book. I mean, I've sent plenty of books out there to prospects who I think are worth it. Nobody throws away a book. They really stand out. You send somebody a $20 book through Priority Mail, which costs about $6 to mail here in the U.S., you're going to stay memorable, I guarantee you. So I'm not saying send this to everybody, but we all know the prospects who are worth spending a little bit more time and attention and money on. A link to a video or a podcast episode you thought would be relevant to them. Don't be afraid to send a handwritten note sometimes. Gosh, those really stand out these days. In terms of where to find this information, you guys know this. I mean, everyone in this group should be kind of staying on top of industry publications, newsletters, blogs, and so forth. So you're already doing or should be doing that, so shouldn't be adding more work to your plate. But as you come across that information, clip it somehow. I use two things. I'll use Evernote, and I've been experimenting with a tool called Pocket, which is free. They got a paid version as well. But the cool thing about Pocket is, as you start clipping articles from the web, it learns what you're doing, and it starts making recommendations of other content along the same lines. So before you know it, you start finding other sources of great information without having to do all that digging yourself. So it's a great little tool. There's an app that goes with it, so you have access to it on your phone. Very, very cool. And this is, guys, this is as simple as it gets. This is all about sending this about every week with a post-it note or with a note and an email that says, hey, I came across this the other day. I thought you'd find it interesting. That's it. I have a sample voicemail script of what because you want to pick up the phone sometimes. You want to switch up the medium. So what I'll do is I'll do email, then I'll do postal mail just to change it up, and then I'll do a call. And I'll be honest, many times when I do this, I'm calling at times that I know they won't be there because I don't necessarily need to talk to them. All I want to do is leave my voice. It just changes the medium, and it gets noticed because it's so different. Okay? So it's a matter of just picking you know, times when you're going to do this, do five people at a time. You can keep it as easy and as low-key as a spreadsheet and just go down your list. And as you think of each person, say, you know, what would be interesting for them? And let me look to see what I have in my Evernote notebook or in Pocket. In terms of the frequency, I've been mentioning 8 weeks. That's kind of the baseline frequency that I recommend. What do I mean by that? Unless you know something in terms of when they may have a need or when you should contact them again because something's coming up that would alter that frequency, when in doubt, just stick to about an 8-week schedule. 8 weeks is about right because it means that, you know, on average, 6 times a year, you'll touch base with people. So it's not so frequent that it starts becoming weird, but they're not so far apart that they'll forget you. So about 8 weeks is about right, but then take into account things such as, you know, where they are in terms of the decision, if you know anything like that, who contacted whom. If somebody's pursuing me, that changes the dynamics a little bit because usually obviously they've identified the need. They were the ones who were motivated. Things a prospect may have told me, any cues that I've picked up on, how long they've been on my nurturing list. So typically the longer they've been on there, the less frequently I'm touching base. It's been 18 months. Usually at that point I'm kind of either backing off or making sure that they're still at that company if I haven't heard from them at all in a long time. So, you know, just adjust it using common sense essentially. All right, so let's talk about the action plan, just kind of summarizing here. Again, you want to start this process by activating dead leads and dormant clients. Then you want to start knocking on new doors, cold prospects who never heard of you, using warm emails. And then as you start getting responses, people who are, again, not in the 3%, they're in that 40% group. Hey, you know, thank you, but you know, we're all good right now. I'll let you know if our needs change. That's someone who's not yet ready. They should make your nurturing list, and you should stay in touch with them. Again, a summary of what to send whom. Dead leads and dormant clients, send them 9-word emails. Cold prospects should only get warm emails. And then not yet ready leads should get nurturing emails. However, you should also sprinkle in some 9-word emails. Okay, so notice that when you look back at the flavors, notice that the "are you still" emails can work particularly well, but some of the other flavors could work just as well. So mix it up. Don't just do 9-word emails. You want to do a combination of just straight up, hey, I came across this, and hey, do you or are you or would you emails every once in a while. One quick tip, and this has come up recently, when you are getting booked up with work and you don't feel like prospecting for new clients would be a good investment of your time, don't stop the process. The important thing is to keep the habit. So don't stop, but instead of knocking on new doors, instead of sending out warm emails to cold prospects, shift that effort to nurturing. So in other words, start spending all that time then nurturing your list a little better. I find that nurturing is one of those activities that few people ever do. They'll do it one time, and then they'll forget, and they won't do it again for a long time. So it gives you, when you're busy, a great reason to stay in touch because you don't necessarily need to work. All you're doing is just staying in touch with people who are not yet ready. And I find that when you do that, you're in a better place anyway, so you're not desperate. Number one. And number two, if a prospect on that list, and this happens often, says, hey, Tim, I'm glad you reached out to me. Hey, I have a project I'd like to talk to you about. All you did was reach out with something you thought would be interesting to them, but now they're talking to you about something. It won't be weird to tell them, Jane, I appreciate that. I am actually booked solid right now for the next 3 to 4 weeks. Is this something that can wait? Right? So they're the ones who came to you. You were just staying in touch. So it's okay to say that. But if you're knocking on doors and you're booked solid and you have to turn something down, That would be strange, wouldn't it? You know, here you are prospecting for business and then declining business. It doesn't work. A couple of tips here that I included in the handout in terms of how to make this work, because I know this sounds great on paper, but in practice can be difficult. I'm a big believer in having designated days for designated tasks. So one way you could do it, I prefer to kind of the second approach. Instead of doing a little bit each day, I prefer to focus on certain activities in the middle of the week, like Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursdays. For instance, those could be client work only days, and then have Mondays and Fridays for, it could be some client work or it could be some other type of work, but that's when I designate my prospect research, sending out warm emails, following up with not yet ready prospects, et cetera. So I give you a couple of different ideas there, but you would know better what would work for you. The point is, when you have designated days for certain tasks, they're much more likely to get done. It gives your week a little bit more structure. And lastly, I highly encourage you that you start something today. You know, commit to something. I know that, you know, I don't know about you, but if somebody tells me, oh, I got to spend 4 hours on this, or I got to start doing and dedicating an hour a day on work days to this activity, you know, the intention is there, but I'm probably not going to get it done. So if you find that that's happening to you, I encourage you to just say, you know what, I'm only going to spend 5 minutes or 15 minutes. That's how I'm going to get started. And then actually write down what you'll do with those 15 minutes. So start small. The important thing is to start. Once you start, I guarantee you that you'll keep going and that you'll, you know, even if it really is 15 minutes, that you'll schedule some time to do more the following day. The hardest thing really is starting. So start today. I have some space in here. I encourage you to, as childish as this might sound, write down exactly the first action you will take in this playbook and give yourself a deadline. And even if it's a very small action that will take you 5-10 minutes to do, I encourage you to do it. That's how big things happen, is with those first initial steps. All right, guys. So with that, let's open it up. So if you have a question, you want to talk through any of this, you want to brainstorm a couple of scripts or some strategy here, I'm available. So just start to on your telephone keypad. We'll raise your hand. I'll bring you in, and, we'll talk. All right, so I either bored you to death or you are shocked. Hey, Tim.
Hey, how's it going, Ed?
Hey, good, buddy. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. I'm well. Had a kind of an unexpected week, as I mentioned. My father passed away about was it beginning of last week? Actually, that seems like an age ago. But
I'm so sorry about that, buddy.
Thank you. Appreciate that. The memorial service is all done, and I'm back home again, and so I'm starting to pick up where I left off and do some things. I started off this thing having a question about frequency of response, but then you covered that. The 8-week thing seems to be about the best on average. But I try to think of a follow-up question to that. Are there times when you might modify that 8-week response or follow-up thing, and if so, what sorts of criteria would you use to determine that?
Yeah, so most of it really is just kind of intuition, but things that I will factor in are anything they've shared with me in the previous conversation or email exchange. For instance, hey, we're working on some things. There might be a need this summer feel free to stay in touch, but right now we don't have anything. So, okay, so they've given me an indication that there might be a need this summer. So let's say that it is now, February. I will probably, all right, so 8 weeks from now would be April. That would have been when I would have followed up anyway if we're going to look at something in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so in that case, I would go ahead and do April. If I don't hear again, though, if I don't hear back from my touch point, my follow-up in April, then I will probably wait just 4 weeks and touch base again. However, let's look at that situation. We go from now in February, they told me maybe in April. I don't want to my first nurturing contact to be, hey, you know, are you still thinking about blah, 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 right? So that nine-word email, that would be appropriate there. But I don't want it to be that. So what I might do is maybe late March send something interesting and relevant, and then maybe late April or early May, maybe even mid-May, send a nine-word email, are you still thinking about?
Okay.
That way, here's another way to look at it. When you nurture a prospect, you're making deposits. Think of it that way. You're making deposits into a relationship or a trust account. And if the first nurturing email I send is a, are you still, that's not making a deposit. It's a very effective email, but you haven't made a deposit.
Right.
Right, so what I want is I want to make deposits. That way, when the timing is right, I can make a withdrawal. Does that make sense?
Right. Yeah, it does. And the nine-word email sounds like it's more often a withdrawal than a deposit. Would that be a fair statement?
It is. It is. Now, it's not a negative thing. I'm just, you know, maybe it's not really a withdrawal. It's just there's no – it's neutral, right?
Hmm.
It's neutral. So let's take that example. Hey, thanks. You know, we're covered right now. We might be changing some things, maybe third or fourth quarter, second half of the year, we might be looking at some projects. So now that gives me an opportunity to send a couple of value-added emails. Between, you know, let's say in March, one in May, then in June, it's a nine-word email.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense.
So, yeah, you kind of have to, you know, there's no formula here, but think in terms of, and of course, another example would be if they didn't give you any kind of timing, but if they were very enthusiastic or they seem grateful or appreciative that you contacted them. Maybe they liked your approach. I've seen this happen many times. Like, hey, you know what? I rarely get an email like this. This is really cool. But they don't give you any indication as to timing. You know, but we don't have a need right now. I appreciate you. If sometimes we do, but I appreciate you checking in, then I kind of go to an 8 week because I don't know much more.
Mm-hmm.
And then let's say that in some of that, they respond to one of them and say, hey, Tim, thanks for the follow. This is really good stuff. Hey, we might have something for you in next quarter. So, you know, feel free to stay in touch. I don't have a lot of details yet, but, you know, feel free to ping me if you haven't heard from me by July or something like that. Then that gives me something to go on, and then I adjust my schedule.
Right. Another question occurs to me as part of this. I used to do business development for a heavy equipment operator training company, and long story. Anyway, what we used to do there in our sales process is after and we did it by phone. We didn't do it by email, so. What we would often do is we'd say these are people we kept in touch with on a regular basis, and we'd say to them, Do you have any need for any training needs at the moment? And if they said no, then the next question would be, would you mind if we kept in touch? Not very often, not too frequently, don't want to be a pest, just every couple of months or so. Does that, and in a way you're sort of asking permission to keep in touch, is that even relevant in an email situation? I mean, it sounds like with the initial contact, even if they say, yeah, we don't have anything right now, and they don't, they're somewhat vague on what they, if they have anything at all. So you're sort of in a nurturing position. Would asking permission on keeping in touch on a regular basis be too obsequious, or what do you think?
I don't like it because it you're placing an obstacle. So if they don't respond, now that puts you in a weird position because now you don't feel like you've had their blessing. You're asking for their blessing. And it's a yes or no question.
Right.
I'd rather err on the side of, you know, just let me just stay in touch.
Sure.
And you don't really need their blessing to do that. I mean, if it's going to be value add. Now, I think there is an opportunity there, though, to ask another question which won't impact your nurturing, and that is if you have a newsletter. Then ask them if you can add them to your mailing list. And I wouldn't say nobody wants a newsletter, but what have you asked? Hey, I send out a quick tip about every 4 to 6 weeks to my clients and prospects. Would you mind if I added you to my distribution list for that?
Hmm. Okay.
Quick marketing tip, or, you know, just let them know what that is. That's easier to say yes to, as opposed to, hey, I have a can I add you to my newsletter?
Right.
Better. So that's a yes or no, but it doesn't impact your follow-up. You're only going to get a yes or no response to that. If you get a yes, then great. That's one more layer to your nurturing. It doesn't replace the one-to-one follow-up because, remember, a newsletter is one-to-many.
Right.
So they say yes, go ahead and add them, and then still do your add them to your nurturing list.
Right. So it's two different channels of communication, so one shouldn't preclude the other.
Exactly.
Gotcha.
Yep.
Good. Thank you. That's I kind of rambled on and had supplemental follow-up questions. I felt like I was a reporter at
a news
conference.
No, that's good. Those are great. I mean, that's why I'm here, you know. If you want to brainstorm some hypothetical situations, or that's good stuff. You know, the key thing is doing it. This is actually a lot easier than it sounds if you commit to it and if you block the time. And like I said, you don't have to block that much time
to get
it done.
Right.
Especially the nurturing. Right now I'm doing it with a spreadsheet. You know, I'm using a spreadsheet because this year one of the things that I'm trying to do is not my purely business contacts, but more of business relationships outside of my core business in friends. I'm trying to do a better job of staying in touch, and I'm dedicating about an hour on Friday afternoons to doing that. And it's super easy. You know, I know I have every Friday I have a kind of a running thing every Friday, and I block out an hour, and I just go to the next five people on my spreadsheet. And the first pass is really easy because all I've been doing, because of the nature of the relationship, because these are friends, acquaintances, and colleagues, it's a, hey, Hannah, Ed Gandia here. Hey, it's been a long time. I was thinking about you the other day. How are things going? We should get together for lunch. In some cases, if that's appropriate, or in some cases, they're not local. And just catch me up. Things here are going well, and I just give them like a two-sentence update, and that's it. So those are really easy as kind of a first pass.
Mm-hmm.
But then after that, it's just, you know, what would be relevant, what would be useful for Hannah?
Right, right. Oh, good. Well, thank you for that. That's I've started kind of on the first stage of that already. I've got HubSpot, using HubSpot, and then I've been going through the folks I've done work for before, and making sure I send out at least one a day. That kind of got interrupted over the last little while, but I spend my mornings going through that list and picking about three or four of them, and then making sure at least one of them gets some kind of an email by the end of my time that I'm working on that. So,
awesome.
And you're right, it's that mini habit thing that makes it doable. You know, I'm just going to send out one email, because I can remember back when I was doing this phone stuff, they were expecting us to do 20 calls a day, and it was just some days it was just like pulling teeth, you know. But if I was asked to do one call a day, it's more than likely I would get five, or maybe even seven or ten, or maybe I'd get all 20. But if you start with the big picture, it just looks so insurmountable that you just give up almost immediately.
Exactly. One push-up, that's it.
Yes. Yep, exactly. Yeah. Good, thanks. I'll stop talking here so you can let my colleagues get at you now.
All right, Tim. No worries. Thank you. All right. Let's see. Next I have Mars. Hey, Mars.
Hey, hi. So thanks for today's content. Like on the warm email, with your template, you make reference to a sample of related work or related clients or customers, like in the same industry, like IT or whatever. And what if they're like on your target list, but you don't have that direct of a sample? Like if I haven't done any plastic film writing, since I've taken up under my current umbrella. I mean, I could leverage my past experience, but what do you recommend when you don't have, like, a direct sample, which is part of your template?
So keep in mind the templates is just some credibility element, and many times it's going to be a link, but it could be, hey, here's a page, here's a link to my website that tells you a little bit more about me and my experience, or here's a page that it explains why I'm different, so that could be your Why Me page. What you want, here's the thinking behind that, Marsh, is you don't want to give them everything on the email, because it's going to be a wall of text and they're just not going to read it. So if you give them a little bit and you pique their interest and you show them where they can learn a little bit more about you and how you might be able to help them, then that you're getting micro commitments. And then that way it's more inviting, and if it sounds interesting, then they can click through and read your Why Me page, for instance, or skim it. You see what I'm saying? So it's really just a way to keep you from trying to say all of that in the email, because that's what most emails out there that pretend to be warm emails, that's what they're doing, is they're just trying to do too much in the email. They're too long. So just pique their interest and then send them to just even a page on your site that tells you a little bit more about you. You don't have to name clients in their particular industry. As long as you're sticking to your target market, then I think you'll be fine.
Okay, then another question, since we're all from the same class here on the call. Is there like a ratio that you have in mind in terms of billable versus non-billable hours? Because when I think through my non-billable hours, there's this nurturing and keeping the pipeline full kind of effort, and then there's the ongoing need I have to keep my own industry knowledge up to date, including the various software tools. And so that's like two, and even like my own back end, like accounting and stuff. So all of that together, nurturing goes into my non-billable hours bucket. And then there's the billable hours of servicing the clients. So do you have any kind of ratio in mind, like how many – I mean, I know you gave us some hours on the handout, like 4 hours a week or whatever to do the nurturing. But I guess the nurturing blended with our own content creation, our own newsletters. Rule of thumb for how much of how many non-billable hours would you assign a week to that?
Yeah, so first of all, those are just examples. I'm not saying you should dedicate any of these hours to it.
Right.
I just wanted to show you how you could, from one example to the next, how you could redistribute the hours. In terms of, let me answer it two ways, because I think there's a bigger question is how much time should I dedicate to marketing and nurturing? You know, what's the rule of thumb? And the one that tends to work the best is 10%. At a minimum, 10% of your work week, let's say you've decided to work 40 hours a week, so 4 hours at a minimum every week, even when you're book solid, should be dedicated to some sort of marketing activity, even if it's nurturing. So remember when I said if you're book solid, consider spending all that time on nurturing. So 4 hours. That gives you kind of a good rule of thumb. In terms of billable versus non-billable, there's no published ratio out there. The one that I've heard a lot is 50-50. 50% billable tends to be very, very common. But I've never really accepted that because I think there are a lot of opportunities to have a higher billable ratio. So I don't know. I just always said that's not right. I don't accept it. And I kind of go for 70-80%. 80% starts getting really, really high. That's unsustainable. But 70% is aggressive but very doable. And then what you have to do, Mars, is you have to look at things like, you know, what can I outsource, delegate to other people that could, you know, help me focus more on billable work. For instance, bookkeeping, accounting, even small things like transcriptions, proofreading, that sort of thing.
Okay, and then on another question, you mentioned Zoho as one of the CRM options, and I've started to play around with a lot of the Zoho modules across the board. And they also have not just the CRM, but the Contact Manager, which is like a lighter version of their CRM.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how deep gone with that, because to me it's very appealing to have everything integrated into one platform, because it seems like if I migrate my email completely to Zoho, it'll populate my CRM or the contact management system. So I don't know how deeply you've gone with a fully integrated solution.
I haven't. Just because of the nature of my business, it mostly runs on Infusionsoft. But I don't like using their contact management for my nurturing and for my own more personal stuff.
Okay.
So, yeah, but I haven't. I know Ted from the group uses Zoho for CRM, but I don't think I'm not sure if he's using it. He's working on his newsletter. I'm not sure if he's using that as well.
Well, I believe they integrate with MailChimp. I haven't done my newsletter yet. But that brings me to my next question, which is, I know some people have, like, filters, I've heard this, on their emails, like if there's a subscribe or unsubscribe information in an email, they have it go directly to their junk files. So it's like we're being given... And I'm not criticizing, I'm just commenting and trying to think through. You know, on the one hand, we're told to do emails or newsletters to keep ourselves top of mind, which I think is a great idea. But then people might be filtering out our newsletters. And then to combat that, we also have the one-on-one approach. But going over to the newsletter side, even though that's not the focus here, but it's all kind of related, do you find that for the newsletter portion it's more effective to do just a simple... Like, you don't have a lot of graphics on your newsletters. It's just kind of like a short, you know, blurb with all text. Do you find that's more effective at getting through with better open rates than if you have, like, I was thinking of doing something with formatted graphics with, like, three repeatable kinds of content in my newsletter.
Yeah, so it really depends. There's no straight answer on that. I think it's really more of a issue of preference in the target market you're going after. If you're going after a market that's, you know, kind of, and I'm just giving one example, like really design heavy, or let's say you work with a lot of designers, so that would be an example where I think you might be better off with a really nice design template for your newsletter. Otherwise, it's completely up to you. I've chosen to go, you know, use kind of a text only, because I'm trying to subconsciously replicate that one-to-one feel. And when the brain sees color and design and all that, and all this fancy formatting, it starts thinking one-to-many. You know, so I'm trying not to do that as much as possible, even though people know it's a broadcast, right? I'm trying to keep it as personal as possible. So that's the approach I like, but I have no – that's anecdotal. I really have no science to show that that's going to be more effective, and then it depends on the audience and what you're trying to do.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, but you know, I'd say one other thing, Marsh. I wouldn't let, you know, what you just said about, oh, some companies, what they'll do is they'll take, you know, any mention of unsubscribe and see that as a newsletter and filter it out. I wouldn't let that discourage you from starting and sending out a newsletter, because I think those are really exceptions. And if somebody, a prospect, decides to subscribe to your newsletter, or you've asked them and they said, sure, go ahead and add me, there's a good chance that they're going to get your email. So I wouldn't use that as the basis for that decision. I would do it anyway.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay. Let's see. Susan. Hey, Susan. Sorry, I know you've had your hand raised for a while. How are you?
That's okay. Lots of good questions. It's okay.
Yeah.
I have a question that I'm not sure there's an answer to, but while I have you, I figured I'd toss it out there.
Okay.
A lot of the folks that I target are CEO and you know, leaders, if you will. And so many of them have admins who screen their email for them. Any thoughts about that? And, you know, sometimes they get my emails and then sometimes they don't. They get screened out. So just didn't know if you had any thoughts around the whole gatekeeper thing.
Yes, great question. And here's what I would say. Any tricks to try to bypass the gatekeeper through, you know, some gimmick, you don't want to do that. So the best way to get through the gatekeeper is to do everything we've been talking about here. Because when you think about it, right, that you're trying to send authentic, relevant, personalized emails.
Mm-hmm.
Short, personalized, expecting your response. So, yeah, I think the best way to do it is just to do the everything we've been talking about here. Because first of all, there's nothing you can do to you can't preface it by saying, you know, if this is Scott's assistant, please make sure he gets this. Like, that's just going to backfire, right?
Yeah.
And you know that. And there's no other hack that I know of. And I've read a lot about this, and I've had to deal with this a lot. It always comes back to the same thing. It's like the best way to get through the gatekeeper is just to do what you would do as a normal, reasonable human being who
right,
wants to connect authentically.
Yeah, because it should stand out for them as easily as it would for the intended recipient is the idea, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, okay.
All they are is a filter, and they're acting as a filter that the executive would have anyway. So if it's written in a way that it would get through the executive's filter, then it will get through the filter that is the gatekeeper.
Cool. That's all. All right, great. Thanks.
Yeah, you're welcome. In fact, you know what I would say, Susan, is this – here again, this stuff will stand out. I mean, because it is – very much unlike everything else they get. I tell you, there's been a trend over the past 5 years. A lot of marketers have tried to mimic this warm email approach, in a broadcast fashion. And I keep a bunch of examples because my email's been out there for a long time, so I get added to a lot of lists. I subscribe to a lot of things, and so I get them. And it's interesting. They're trying to do it, but it's they're still failing. Because you cannot personalize a one-to-many email.
No, I agree. They do try. Yeah, a lot of the major retailers are doing that. So you'll get an email, hey, based on your last purchase, you might be interested in this, you know, that kind of thing. That probably works a little better, but what we're doing, I really appreciate what you're sharing with us and the scripts and stuff, because this is perfect for what I'm doing and I think for what most of us are doing as far as, you know, needing to take the time to write individual emails. It's not it's a little more time consuming, but totally worth the effort, I think, in the long run.
Totally, and it doesn't take that much, really.
No.
I got one the other day that this. Sorry, what was that?
Oh no, but once you have the template down, then you just tweak it and. You know, I mean, you're still customizing. It's still a template, but you're customizing the template.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Let me find one here, and I'll show you what I mean. Let's see. Can we? 'Cause some of these are pretty bad. A lot of them. So there's different layers. One of the layers is like, you know, these SEO companies and. Offshore software development, and these are really bad. But here we go. Are you? Okay, so listen to this one. Hi, Ed. So first of all, the subject line, they use RE colon as if, you know, we've had correspondence already. RE, are you as efficient as possible? Hi, Ed. I know it's a busy time of year and important messages can get buried, but wanted to make sure this opportunity came across. In brief, we make your work life easier by streamlining your expense and AP invoice processes. Right there, you lost me. You know, this is not going to be relevant to me. And, yeah. So, let's see, another one. Here's one I've been getting a lot. Call on Tuesday at 2 p.m. This is subject line. So it's a bait and switch because you got me. I'm like, oh, wait a minute. I don't recognize the name, but I guess we have a call on Tuesday with this person. So I open it and immediately, so this is why you don't want a bait and switch. I'm immediately disappointed. Hi, Ed. I hope this email finds you well. I'd like to ask, would you be interested in combining LinkedIn, voice, and email campaigns to drive potential clients to your business? I believe we can help you in developing warm leads and in setting up appointments on your behalf. We can act as your professional marketing arm while you focus on closing deals. We have extensive experience and lists of contacts in your industry, blah, 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 blah. Right? So not relevant to what I do. If you had taken just a minute, you would have realized that I don't have that kind of business. And then, add insult to injury, you did the bait and switch with the subject line.
Yeah.
Now, let's just take, her name is Polly. How could Polly have fixed this? Instead of calling Tuesday at 2 p.m., what if she put it in the subject line, lead generation? Hi, Ed. Do you have a need for someone to follow up on your coaching leads, Polly, and then maybe her signature, so it gives me a little bit of context. I would have responded to that. Even though, when you think about it, she did something that I advised not to do. She sent a 9-word email to a cold prospect. Notice that I said with cold prospects, sent a warm email. But I would have probably responded, but I would have definitely responded had it been a warm email. Hey, Ed, I know that you work with coaching clients, you know, business coaching clients. I'm not sure if this is something that would be of interest, but here's what we do. Here's a link tells you a little bit more. Should we connect? I would have responded to that. Hmm. anyway, I could talk about this all day long.
Awesome.
Let's see, Mars. Hey, Mars.
Hey, this is just a tip for the group. I went, like, in the last week or two to a major consumer products player that's headquartered in Cincinnati but functions internationally, and they had, like, the head buyer who was also in charge of, like, supplier diversity talking, and he gave all kinds of examples of emails that he would actually thought were good versus were bad. And one thing that he did, and this would probably fall into our warm email prospecting category, he highlighted somebody who had not only shown their research into what was new at his company, but they had looked at this guy's, like, LinkedIn profile and said, hey, I see that you were, like, I don't know, from Pittsburgh. Are you a Steelers fan or a so-and-so fan? Because now he lived in Cincinnati. And he said when he read that, because that was one of the things he was, like, into, he felt compelled to reply. You know, so that extra kind of personalization of, like, I just sent one to somebody in Michigan, and I talked about which is your favorite food, and I named two kinds of favorite food of mine from Michigan. And she, like, jumped right on that. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So just for everybody as a way to personalize it on some of the warm email prospecting.
Yeah, you have to be careful with those because there's not enough trust yet, and that could go either way. I prefer to personalize on the business front, but yeah, I mean, it's something you can always test, right? It could come across as gimmicky, like I'm trying to. You know, you've heard the story of the sales guy who goes into the executive's office and see, you know, pictures of you know, some fishing trips in the background. Hey, so you like to fish? It could feel phony, but if done right, some people can't help themselves, right? If they're huge Steelers fans. Man, you talk anything Steelers, you know, you got me. Yeah.
Right, but, like, this particular company, I mean, they're kind of all known for – I hate to say it, large egos, like the people that work there, I mean, across the board, I mean, to even get into them, I mean, you have to have a strong, large ego. So there's a certain level of, and I hope my words aren't like, going to be, like, published anywhere, Ed, but, I mean, like, arrogance. So I'm just saying to break through, like, an arrogant purchaser that knows that they've got power in the marketplace, this was just one guy who says, hey, I know I'm arrogant, I know I've got power, but this is what worked for me. So I understand what you're saying on the keeping it personalized to the business aspect, but I just thought it was an interesting perspective from a wheeler dealer. I know I'm powerful, you know, King Kong, sort of beat myself on the chest because I've got that power in my marketplace. He said this is what works for him. So I just wanted to share it.
No, good stuff.
I hope those words
interesting.
Published in this recording.
What's that?
Strike that from the recording if you're going to, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, so we're recording, I mean, we're just publishing this to the group.
Okay. But that's a certain kind of persona, too, that we're, you know, may or may not be marketing to. I mean, if Susan's going after the CEOs, I'm just saying.
Yeah. Good stuff. That's it's a good perspective.
Yeah.
All right, guys, so again, star two, if question, comment. All right, so let's see. A couple of things came in. Jessica is listening through the webcast. She says, how do you catch up if you have a busy week and miss a designated day or get off track? Do you just pick up where you left off or try to add that time back in? Yeah, it's a great question because let's face it, that's going to happen. So I two suggestions. One is first ease into this. So if you know that your schedule could be erratic, sometimes unpredictable, or there's a lot of variability, then I would, if you're not doing much now or nothing in these three areas, I would start small, like I had mentioned earlier, and just schedule in, you know, 15 minutes. I know that sounds ridiculously short, but if you know going into this 15-minute period, exactly what are you going to do? And let's just say that maybe, tomorrow's Friday. Tomorrow at 1 o'clock, I'm going to spend 15 minutes on this. And what I'm going to do in those 15 minutes is find at least three people in my mailing list or in my database who are dead leads or dormant clients. That's it. I'm not going to contact them. I'm just going to find them. 15 minutes. Then you won't waste time because you'll know what you're going to do in those 15 minutes. The other thing is you'll make sure you do it because it's a mini habit, like, you know, Tim was talking about earlier. It's a mini thing. It's a mini commitment. You feel foolish not doing it. So ease into this. Do less than you think you would do. Commit to less than you think you would do. And then increase it very slowly until you are comfortable with what you can commit. Don't say, oh, starting next week, I'm going to do 6 hours. Don't do that. That's the first thing. Second of all, if you do get off track, you miss a week, I mean, this is really up to you. If it were me, I would not try to add last week's hours to this week's. I think that is a recipe for disaster because now you've created an expectation for yourself, and it's a very hard expectation to meet. And if you don't meet it, it's just going to mess with your psyche. So I'd rather say, you know what happened, happened. You know, kind of like if you miss a workout, I'm not going to do a double workout tomorrow because then I'm not going to go. So it's like, you know what? I missed it. That's fine. Whatever. The key thing is in getting back on track. The key thing is developing and maintaining the habit. Now, you have to be careful at the same time not to let this become kind of a weekly thing where you keep missing your prospect. Because if you go 2 or 3 weeks and you haven't prospected, you've done your prospecting time or your nurturing, then I think it's time to revisit this and figure out why. And it's not that there's something wrong with you, but maybe you are trying to do too much. You know, maybe you really need to start from the beginning and scale it back. So, yeah, don't try to add those hours and that time back. I think it's not going to work. Karen also posted, and sorry, Karen, I put Kate in the handout, but that was totally your email, which worked really well and landed you work. As you know, I've just launched my newsletter. For those who are on my subscriber list, do you still recommend nurturing every 8 weeks or so? I'm planning to send my newsletter every month. I would, because they're two different things. It's a different layer. Now, I would do it in a way that doesn't coincide with the week that you sent them the newsletter. So if, let's say, your next issue goes out next week, which is the end of February, first week of March, I would next week nurture prospects who are not in my newsletter list, right? And then maybe a week or two after that, I could go ahead and touch base with those who are on my list. Because you want to kind of spread it out, right? You want to kind of make sure to spread out the effectiveness or your efforts. But it's two different types of follow-up, and so you do need to treat them differently. And one doesn't replace the other. All right, guys, so last call. Any questions, comments, feedback, anything you want to brainstorm? And sorry, Jessica and Karen, I hadn't realized that you guys had submitted those questions about 30 minutes ago, 40 minutes ago. So hopefully you'll catch the replay. All right, I don't see anything else, guys. So we'll go ahead and wrap it up. And again, we'll post this replay tomorrow. It will be in the student portal. I believe Crystal will put it in the bonuses area, but she'll send out an email with a link. So hopefully this has been helpful. I'd love your feedback on this as you start deploying this. You know, please let me know how it's working for you. If you find something that is working well for you, maybe a different flavor of some of this. Maybe you're doing kind of a hybrid with some of these scripts and they're working for you. I'd love to hear about it. So just keep me posted. Good luck. Again, the best thing you could do is just to start as soon as possible, even if it's just one small action. That's better than waiting until you have a big block of time to do it perfectly. All right, so thanks again, guys, and we'll talk again real soon.